Today is February 5th, 2014, and this is episode number 241 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, cat wrangler. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
If people only knew.
You know, it's that was another. Oh crap! I forgot to think of a title.
Yes, but for us, it has special significance.
Indeed.
And everyone sitting at home right now, leaning in closer to the speakers, even though they have their headphones in, like, what's the significance?
Exactly. He said cat. Does that mean something? Not what you think, folks.
No.
No, unfortunately. Steve Ballmer.
Speaking of cats.
Steve Ballmer is gone.
Yes, he is.
He is gone from Microsoft. No longer the CEO of Microsoft, and Bill Gates no longer the chairman.
Right. Now, Bill is still on the board of directors.
Yes. Now, and, Steve is a board member, isn't he? Steve Ballmer?
Yeah, I believe he is.
Yeah. But Bill was chairman. And he stepped down from chairman, but now he's the technology advisor on Microsoft's board.
Right. And he said he's going to be giving more time to Microsoft.
Ooh. Did he say that?
Uh-huh. He did. Up to a third of his time, he'll now be available to advise on projects.
That is... interesting. I'd missed that in all the news. So, incoming. Who do we have incoming?
So now we have Sanjay Nadella. I believe I'm saying his name correctly.
I thought it was Satya.
Is it Satya? That's it. It's Satya.
Yeah. Okay.
Satya Nadella.
Yeah, Indian born. Been at Microsoft for 22 years.
Mm-hmm. He's an engineer. Not a marketing guy.
Yeah, but he's been in Bing, and he's been in Microsoft's cloud services division,
right.
Or
and
whatever.
Yes, and he's done a lot with enterprise technology, too. Not the Starship.
Right. And I believe that over the course of the last year, revenues at his enterprise cloud thingy has grown by 107%.
Right, so that's pretty impressive.
Sure.
Now, whether or not that's relevant to his ability to successfully lead Microsoft out of the desert and recover from Ballmer, well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I want to come back to Bill Gates later, but first let's talk about... Now, did you see that interview he did with, I don't know, it was with an internal Microsoft person doing the quote-unquote interviewing.
Right, the staged interview.
The staged interview, yeah. You watch that?
I did.
It was an area of concern for me that he spent... so much time essentially talking about how Microsoft had everything in place and we have these technologies and, you know, there was a lot. I believe very strongly that Microsoft has got to completely change its direction if it wants to be able to move forward as a leading technology company. I believe that Microsoft got really lucky with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And that Windows succeeded far more because of Bill Gates' business acumen and his willingness and ability to put together ruthless deals that put Microsoft on top and then kept Microsoft on top, rather than because of Microsoft's technology.
I will gladly agree with you on that. I think you just nailed it.
And that Microsoft has been coasting on that for a long time, and that Microsoft has become ruled by the marketing guys, which was actually literally true as well as figuratively true, because Steve Ballmer was a marketing guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that they need someone with product vision in charge, and they need to be willing to kill the fatted calf in order to move on to the fatted cow. I don't know. I'm mixing metaphors here, but
I was waiting to hear where you were going to go with that.
Yeah, so was I, and unfortunately, we're both disappointed. And
well, cat wrangler.
Exactly. I don't want to hear about how Microsoft's going to stay the course. And he didn't ever say those words in this interview, but he all but said those words. He, you know, there was just a lot of, we've got this stuff in place, and now it's just a matter of moving forward. And you know, you don't have anything in place over there. It's all a bunch of garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I've developed a hypothesis over the course of today.
Okay.
And my hypothesis is that before Microsoft announced that Steve Ballmer was retiring,
mm-hmm.
that the company essentially had some sort of internal coup, and some group, and maybe it was the board, took control and said, this is what we're going to do. And you, Mr. Ballmer, are going to be the puppet head that stands up and talks about this. And then when we get your replacement, then you're going to say some nice things. And then you can go sit in the corner of the boardroom.
I largely reject your hypothesis, but not entirely. Whenever stuff like that happens at Microsoft, the word leaks. So,
oh, that's a really good point.
I don't think who would be. I certainly believe that there has been agitation, certainly amongst the Microsoft shareholders. And I can see how there would be that board members were beginning to agitate for change.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we can quite call it a coup. I believe that Steve Ballmer was part of this process of leaving.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's clearly part of the process, whether it's
including the decision
willing. Yeah, maybe. Okay, one thing is certainly clear to me now, which is that Microsoft as a company had a plan of what they wanted. And so instead of finding someone that might have been able to bring a completely different take on how the company can run, they went with someone that's been part of the system for over 20 years.
Yeah, and that's the part that concerns me. I mean, this guy, I didn't know much about him. I've done as much reading as I could in between yesterday and the recording today. And what I've determined is that he is both highly respected, highly qualified certainly as an engineer and probably as an executive.
Mm-hmm.
But it very much concerns me that he's coming within the system. And on top of that, I believe that Bill Gates has been part of the problem. I believe that Bill Gates I've come to respect Bill Gates a lot in the last few years because of his work with
His philanthropic work is it's fantastic.
Yeah, and not just because he's doing philanthropy, not just because he's spending his billions of dollars on philanthropy, but because of all the actual work that philanthropic organization has done. He's done some amazing things with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and I really come to respect him for that. But what I don't respect is the way that, according to information that's leaked, he has put the kibosh on things that de-emphasized Windows or didn't look like Windows or weren't part of Windows over the past 10 years since as chairman. And it's a problem, and I worry that he will continue to do so as technology advisor.
Well, if that's the pattern he has followed for the past 10 years, it would be unreasonable to expect that he's suddenly going to change.
Agreed.
So that's actually very concerning to me.
Yeah. And it can be really hard for the new guy to change things when the old guy's breathing down his neck, looking over his shoulder at everything he's doing.
Well, and not only breathing down his neck and looking over his shoulder, the old guy is going down into the trenches and is going to be right there with the engineers that are working on these projects.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see the new CEO as nothing more than a figurehead, but as we're talking, I'm starting to get worried about that possibility.
Yeah, I don't share that concern. I'm not worried about Mr. Nadalia being a figurehead. I worry that he's going to be stymied, that he's going to try to do stuff, and he's going to be blocked by Bill Gates. Now, that said, Bill Gates is theoretically using some of his efforts to actually, you know, to support this guy, to you know, to get everybody, you know, behind him.
You know, if they're on the same page, then it's not a situation where Bill Gates would be stymieing his actions. He would be the evangelist, the champion in the field.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then I expect nothing new and innovative out of Microsoft. I don't expect to see anything that I'm going to get excited about.
Nope, not at all. But if Bill Gates were to put his considerable experience and considerable talents, you know, such as they are, considerable talents such as they are. Bill Gates is clearly able to move mountains when he wants to.
Sure.
Yeah, he just doesn't have, he's never had any taste product-wise, and he's never had any vision product-wise. And to channel Steve Jobs on the taste side.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if he were to put his considerable talents at moving mountains behind doing whatever it is that Mr. Nadalla, is it Nadalla? I'm already forgetting his name. I have such an issue with names.
I've only written it like 50 times in the last 2 days. You'd think I think
I tweeted it with a T, and I know it's actually a D.
No, people were making jokes about Nutella.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what was going through my head, too. Nadella. Nadella.
Nadella, not Nudella. Nadella.
Right. Nadella. Okay. Satya Nadella. So if Bill Gates were to put his considerable talents in moving mountains behind supporting whatever it is that Mr. Nadella wants to do, and those things that Mr. Nadella wants to do are actually good changes, well, that could be that could be fantastic for Microsoft and then for consumers, because Microsoft could become competitive again.
It could. However, based on his staged interview, I don't know if there is a new vision.
No, I don't know that there is too. I worry. Well, I know that the new guy who's chairman, John Thompson, he was also in charge of the selection committee. So it's kind of interesting that the guy who chose the new guy replaced Bill Gates, right?
Chairman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really easy to speculate that Bill Gates stepping down as chairman was part of the deal.
You know, it doesn't take much imagination to get to that point. It's really easy for me to see where part of the deal for all of this was Bill steps down.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, of course, part of it may be that Bill has been so dissatisfied with the way things have been progressing at Microsoft that he wanted to take a more active role and felt that it was inappropriate to do so in the position of the chairman.
Maybe.
And I'm just kind of grasping. Yeah.
I mean, he's part of the problem. You know, Microsoft financially has been doing well under Steve Ballmer. And it's because, you know, I mean, we've talked about this. Microsoft is a company with 90,000 employees or 80,000 employees, and 30,000 of them are sales and marketing guys, right? This is a problem. Sales and marketing rule the company. Everyone's afraid of doing anything that would disrupt what sales and marketing is doing, and sales and marketing has too much power. I mean, this is what happens. This is Steve Jobs talked a lot about this. You know, we've seen it at many companies over the ages, where the visionaries go away and the sales and marketing guys take over, or the accountants take over, and you know, and innovation stagnates. And it's precisely what happened at Microsoft. And I do have a different way of spinning that interview we watched into a slightly positive direction.
Okay.
I don't know that I buy into it. But I'll spin it anyway, and we'll see how it comes out. So they did that interview for the outward sake of continuity, to reassure Microsoft's partners who have a vested interest in the status quo, and employees who were worried about too much change. And that this was a publicly orchestrated effort, or privately orchestrated effort, to put on this public face of continuity, but that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what is actually going to happen. Yeah, I don't believe it. I tried.
I believe part of it.
I said it with conviction.
You did. You said it with conviction. And I believe part of it. I believe the part where it was orchestrated to put people at ease.
Yes. Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. That interview was to put people at ease. The problem is that anybody who is put at ease by that doesn't need to be they don't need to be catered to. They're the problem.
Yes. And then there's the other two videos that go along with that, where there's one where Bill Gates gives his endorsement.
I didn't see that one.
Okay. So
I should have.
So in that one, Bill Gates gives his endorsement for Sanjay. And
Satya. He's not one of our interns.
Well,
you got to remember his name.
He could be.
Bill Gates, and I'm here to endorse Satya.
Yeah, it was along those lines. And that's where he also said that he'd be devoting more time to Microsoft and would would be making himself available to all the different departments. And so it was an endorsement, and then a statement of what his new commitment is to the company. And then there's the Steve Ballmer video, and that's just fairly recent. So I don't know if you've had a chance to see that.
I watched the one where he stood up with wide gesticulations and talked about how he was going away and this is the best time ever at Microsoft.
That's the one I'm referring to.
Yeah, which, you know, like I want to subtitle that one as LOL Steve Ballmer.
Yes, and the whole time I was watching that video, what I was visualizing just outside the camera range was the guy with the gun pointed at his head.
It
felt so artificial to me.
It did. It felt like a guy trying to convince himself.
It felt to me like a guy that was saying what he needed to say, because if he didn't, it was going to be really, really bad. And there were little things that he was doing that I haven't seen him do before, like the way he was holding his hands, where they were almost cupped in front of him, unless he was doing his gesticulations.
Uh-huh.
And that was so out of character for the other presentations that I've seen him do, that it actually distracted me from the rest of the video.
Fair enough.
And so I had to go watch it again. And the second time I watched it, I'm like, hasn't he worn a wedding ring in every video he's done? But doesn't he have a wedding ring on?
Huh.
And that may or may not mean anything, but it was just one of those little things that I'm looking at. I'm like, huh, that just seems out of character for him too. It just, that whole thing felt to me like it was very forced, and it was very artificial.
Right, which, you know, to be charitable, is understandable. Right? You know,
sure.
This is probably a tough time for Steve Ballmer.
I'm sure it is. I found it interesting that he said Microsoft is one of the big companies in the technology game, not the big company.
Yeah.
He never offered a personal endorsement for Satya.
Satya,
what is my problem? Man. Satya, he didn't offer a personal endorsement for Satya like Bill did. There's just the little things like that that have me wondering what's really going on.
Fair enough, man. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this. It's going to be interesting to see if Microsoft is capable of moving in a new direction.
Yes, I think a lot of people will be watching very closely, us included.
Yeah, definitely us included. Definitely us included. And, yeah. Yeah. By the way, what did you think of the subtitles?
That was weird.
After I first mentioned it, and it's like, well, maybe this is not a subtitle. Maybe this is a closed captioning thing. But I mean, and so like, so what we're talking about, folks, is that the video of the interview with Mr. Nadella is subtitled, including his American-born interviewer, or at least North American-born interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
And and Mr. Nadella is from India, but I mean, his accent is almost non-existent. I mean, the man's been here for decades, and he's extraordinarily intelligent. And his command of English is, you know, probably far better than most Americans. And I'm watching the subtitles. I just like, okay, if you have to subtitle your, I don't know. I found it off-putting and weird.
Yes, it seemed really out of place, and the fact that they did it in all caps, because I started reading along, because that's what I do. I really enjoy watching quality films regardless of what language they're in, and I can do the subtitle reading without any problem. And so I incorporate that into what I'm actually saying.
Sure.
It's all caps. So I start incorporating it as they're both yelling.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And but it could have been a closed captioning thing. It could legitimately have been a closed captioning feature. I've never seen it before on any other Microsoft posted thing. So it kind of struck me as someone thinking that they needed to compensate for the very tiny slight accent that Mr. Nadella has. And I don't know. Whatever. Interesting.
Well, Microsoft's a weird company.
Indeed. Oh, one last thing. I tweeted. Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer both have always had an inferiority complex about Apple, as they should. But it's such that I believe that it's hampered Microsoft. It hasn't challenged or inspired them. It's caused them to do things wrong. And I'm wondering if Mr. Nadella is capable of coming into that position without that inferiority complex.
Oh, that's a possibility. He wasn't there for the beginnings of Microsoft. So he wasn't there for the bedroom and garage level startup drama that was happening when Apple and Microsoft were both getting rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he doesn't have that emotional baggage. But Bill and Steve Ballmer, they both have that baggage because they were there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were both overshadowed by Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both criticized by Steve Jobs. But Mr. Nadella has been there for 22 years. We're talking what? This would be 1992-ish?
Mm-hmm.
And there is still a lot of competition with Apple, still a lot of negative comparisons with Apple. But at the same time, he's spent the last several years in areas outside of Apple, competition with Apple, Bing and cloud services and enterprise mm-hmm. services. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yes.
It's interesting. All right. We should probably move on, don't you think?
Yeah, because we don't want the show to be like 5 hours.
True. That we don't. So then there's Verizon.
Oh, Verizon. Yeah. Okay, so for those of you that are playing along at home and haven't had a chance to read our coverage of this yet, there's a software engineer that works at like an online research sort of company thing, and his CEO contacts him and he says, "Hey, when I'm at home, I can't get into our services without a lot of lag. What's up with that?" So this guy checks and he's like, "Crap, I have the same problem." And he starts doing some research, and it turns out that the bandwidth that he's getting at home on Verizon Fios
mm-hmm.
is
that's their home high speed internet service.
Mm-hmm, right? It's deplorable. And his boss has the same internet service. If he goes to access their back-end system by going through a proxy, like through the company servers and remote login,
right,
it works exactly as it should, just snappy as can be. And their back-end system is based on Amazon Web Services.
Right.
So this guy realizes he has this problem here and with Netflix and I think a couple other services. And so he calls Verizon's tech support and they walk him through all this stuff. And they're like, "Yeah, what we're showing for your bandwidth is great. So we don't know what's going on." And they keep trying things. And finally, the guy just asks the tech outright, if Verizon is throttling services like Amazon and Netflix. And the guy says, yes, we are. And that's why you're experiencing the slowness. Like, it was very explicit question and very explicit answer.
Wow. And yeah. I would assume that Verizon has since terminated that particular employee. But this is a direct consequence of
net neutrality, FCC, appeals court saying you can't enforce net neutrality the way you've set it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, okay, here's the other part, which is Verizon has adamantly denied that they are doing this.
Huh.
And they're saying, look, we don't throttle anyone's bandwidth. We're not throttling any services. That's not what we're doing. And we need to go back and retrain our frontline support people because they're giving out wrong information. So, we have that.
Huh.
And to be fair, would a frontline phone tech support person be privy to that type of information?
Right. Not necessarily.
Yeah, it's possible, but not necessarily.
Not even necessarily likely.
Right. So there's some doubt on what's happening here, but it's very clear the part that we do know.
Well, and it's also very clear that Verizon has, been at the forefront of the fight against net neutrality because they want to be able to do exactly this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we have that. And we have someone that's intelligent enough to actually be able to check and see what their bandwidth usage is and what sort of speeds they're getting over time.
Right.
And they're seeing the slowdown on their connection only when they're accessing these very specific services, like things that use Amazon Web Service.
Right. The exact.
And they've been able to duplicate it on someone else's at someone else's location using the same service.
Right. And this is against the exact kinds of services that Verizon has long wanted to be able to mess with.
Right. So there's a lot happening here that makes me very skeptical of what Verizon is saying. But
you mean the official corporate?
Yes, the official corporate statement. So I do have to question what Verizon corporate is saying. But then I also have to question, does this frontline phone support guy actually have that information?
Right.
And I don't know. But man, it sure is kind of scary to think that now that the FCC is in a position where they have to regroup and figure out how they legally can enforce net neutrality, even they have the authority, they just need to figure out how to legally do it. What happens in the meantime? Are we going to be sitting here with services like Verizon screwing with our Netflix streams, with our use of Amazon Web Services and Hulu? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. We need net neutrality because corporations cannot be empowered, let alone trusted, or can't be trusted, let alone empowered, with deciding which content gets preferential treatment on their pipes. This is a huge problem. This is a massive threat to the integrity of the internet. This is a massive threat to our ability to access the content that we want to access when we want to access it, and this is a serious situation.
It's very serious, and it could, worst case scenario, it is the end of the internet as we know it.
And I feel fine.
You say that now.
I say, yeah. I don't feel fine. I'm not fine at all about this. My guess is that the FCC will find a way to address this. And that we will,
I'm sure that they will.
That we will get some net neutrality again. But there are politicians on the GOP side in particular that don't believe in net neutrality and believe that the dollar should decide what content we have access to. So, you know, there are political forces that are against this, that are against this idea of net neutrality. So, you know, it's, this is a concerning issue.
It's a very concerning issue. And it's not like we as end users can say, well, I only want this part of the internet. And because, okay, it would be like, as an AT&T customer, you decide the only people you're going to call on your phone are other AT&T customers. That's not how it works. So, yeah, see, I'm going to start getting myself worked up.
Yep. Yep. We'll be keeping our eye on this.
We will, because this has a very direct impact on all of us.
Now, let's move on to something lighter.
What could be lighter than that?
Well, lots of things.
But well, okay, that's true.
Of the remaining topics we have that are kind of light, let's take a moment to laugh at Samsung's decisions regarding their sponsorship at the Olympics.
You know, it's funny and sad at the same time.
It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, well, it's sad for Samsung, but it is funny.
So Samsung is, in fact, an Olympic sponsor. Part of that sponsorship included giving Galaxy Note 3s, which is their either their soon-to-be release device or just release device, I'm not actually sure, to all the Olympic athletes, which is, you know, a pretty nifty thing to get in your goodie bag. You can at least sell it for a few $100 after, you know, when you get home. And
use it as a little serving tray,
or use that as a not so little serving tray, and
a mid-sized serving tray.
There was a condition that came with this sponsorship, though, and that's that during the Olympic ceremonies, you know, a lot of the athletes, at least the last time around in the Olympics, a lot of the athletes were filming us, you know, they're filming the spectacular that was going on around them,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the which is very understandable. And Samsung, they were doing this with their smartphones, obviously.
Right. And the majority of those were iPhones.
And Samsung is requiring that all Apple logos be covered amongst the athletes, as that was one of their conditions for sponsoring the Olympics.
I wonder how many people with iPhones are going to put Goatsy stickers on.
probably not many, and we won't see any of them if that's the case. But it's funny to me because it's just I mean, Sam, they're just such a slimy company, you know. If reality, you know, I mean, I'm getting worked up. I understand the notion of being frustrated that when you're paying money to promote your product, that the people that are indirect beneficiaries, and actually direct beneficiaries too, in that they're getting smartphones for free, might be using someone else's product and giving Apple free advertising. And of course, we know that Apple is the recipient of untold massive fortunes of free publicity all the time because people use Apple's products.
Right.
And that Apple logo gets seen. People see it. People see it in TV, and they see it in the movies. And, you know, artists are using it. We see it in interviews all the time. In the creation debate between Bill Nye and Ken Ham, both participants were using MacBook Airs. And, you know, so, you know, there was the Apple logo right there as if Apple was sponsoring the event. Of course, Apple doesn't sponsor the event. Apple never sponsors this stuff. Apple seldom even gives free stuff to as props, you know?
Right.
And I can see being frustrated by that if you're Samsung and wanting to control that. But when you have to deny reality to promote your message is no good.
Yeah, well, at best, your message is not what you want it to be. because if you're telling people you have to cover the Apple logo on your product, then the message that I'm getting is, we're afraid of Apple. We don't want the competition.
Yeah, exactly. And that the only way we can keep the competition away from our message is to artificially constrain it, to deny reality.
Right. And that's not cool. Not cool at all. And it's really funny that they would do this. I think this is going to backfire.
Well, it'll backfire amongst partisans. Now partisans yes. are going to notice.
Yeah, but, people are going to be looking for it now.
Yeah, but the partisans don't matter. The nonpartisans won't. The nonpartisans wouldn't have noticed anyway, and the nonpartisans aren't really going to notice now.
Yeah, okay, it's going to backfire within part of the tech media. I think.
Yes, that's true. There could end up being, yeah, it'd be funny if there end up being lots of snarky mainstream coverage if Samsung, I mean, because I hope that Samsung will be treated as the joke that it is for this, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's I'm expecting that when I'm watching the Olympics, like the opening ceremonies, and they're doing the close-ups on the athletes, and they're all excited, and they have their iPhones out, and they're filming, that it's going to be very obvious that they had to cover up the Apple logo.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I think Apple fans were all, would have been all, hey, check it out. That guy or that girl, they're using an iPhone. And no one else would have paid that much attention.
Yep.
But now, everyone's going to be looking at the piece of tape or the sticker or whatever it is that they put on the back of their iPhone to cover up the logo.
Yep.
Now,
all of which makes me say one thing.
Uh-huh. I knew you were going to do that, so I had to kind of sit back. All right, so one thing that I missed out of this, and I'm not sure if it's something that I just missed or if it hasn't been discussed, is it just Apple, or do people with HTC phones have to cover up their logo?
Well, the word is, so this all leaked from the Swiss Olympic team. I say leaked. The Swiss, leaked is probably not the right. The Swiss Olympic team told. Blue Win, the German site, told Blue Win about it. I believe it's all competitor logos, but really, I mean, you know, we're talking about Apple.
Okay.
I mean, I can't imagine when this decision was discussed in whatever Samsung corporate offices it was discussed in, that I can't imagine that any of them were worried about people seeing HTC logos, LG logos, Windows Phone logos, Nokia logos. Can't imagine that was a concern. I think the concern was undoubtedly all those people are going to, you know, some of them are going to have iPhones. Do you remember? I mean, that's probably why they gave phones in the first place, is because they saw so many iPhones in the hands of athletes in the last Olympics.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's exactly the way they did it.
And, funny. Funny stuff, sort of. Pathetic in a funny.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, let's...
So it wasn't as lighthearted as you led me to believe, Brian.
Well, sorry. Well, let's go darker still. Let's talk about Facebook Paper.
Oh, yeah.
What the heck is up with that?
Okay, so last week, Facebook announced that they were launching a new iPhone app for viewing your Facebook stream. And it's called Paper. Now, what it does is it gives you an interface that feels more like Flipbook on the iPhone.
Flipboard?
So, Flipboard, thank you, Flipboard. So it's
Satya, by the way. Just reminding you.
Yeah, Satya's Flipboard. Yeah. I'm not going to get invited back to the show again. It's mine.
I don't think I'm the one who's not going to be invited back to the show.
Yet next week, it's just going to be the interns.
Oh, good Lord. Oh,
sorry, people.
That's a good idea. We should have them do a whole show sometime.
We could take a week off. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong with that? You guys want to do a show? Oh, they look enthusiastic. At least I think that's what he's doing. It's kind of hard to tell with that. Tape.
I wasn't sure if that was flirting or enthusiasm. No. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
I feel kind of awkward.
Let's discuss that. We'll discuss that with him off air.
Right. Okay. So the paper app from Facebook lets you look at your Facebook content in it's actually a pretty nice layout. It's pretty cool visually. And then it also adds in the ability to include alternate topic sources. And these alternate topic sources are curated articles from like legitimate big name news sources. So it'd be like National Geographic. I've seen a bunch of content from them show up. And so you can pick several different categories. You add those to your list, and then you get to look at what your friends are saying, and then you get all of this this interesting news coverage as well. And so the idea is, it's like your own little personal newspaper, just
Facebook
like Flipboard.
Has delusions of platform.
Sure. And this is no surprise. They've had this delusion for a while, so they've created their Flipboard clone, but they called it Paper. Now,
why would they do that? There's already a Paper app.
Exactly, Paper by 53, which is the drawing app, and it's
wonderful.
Been out since 2012. Yeah, it's my drawing app of choice.
It's my drawing app of choice, and I can't draw. Let's not go there. Stop. Don't even.
Okay, well, while Brian's headphones are muted, everyone, I really do love his drawings.
Oh, you're a sick, sick puppy. But Paper by 53 is a fantastic drawing app that really seeks to give artists on the iPad that paper experience.
Yes, and instead of adding in all kinds of Photoshop-like features, they keep it simple. So in some ways, it's very limited compared to other drawing programs, but that's not by accident. They have been very selective about what types of features they add in because they want it to be an analog for paper drawing as closely as possible.
They should still add layers. I don't care if you can't do that in the real world.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So Paper by 53 exists. It's been out there for years. It's quite popular and quite successful. And they've had a trademark on this and are going to sue Facebook, right?
Well, they haven't said they're going to sue Facebook, but it's not off the table.
Well, but they don't actually have the trademark yet. I was giving you the opportunity to explain.
Oh, you were. I totally see what you were doing there.
So they're gonna, you know, they've got a trademark on that, and they're gonna sue Facebook, right?
Not so fast, Brian. How'd I do that time?
Much better.
Sweet. Okay. The deal is they have a trademark on the name Paper by 53. They filed for a trademark on the name Paper the very same day that Facebook announced their Paper app.
Right.
Now, that was a smart move for them, especially if they end up in court, because they can show that they're working to protect the name. But they already have a pretty strong case for themselves, because there's this term called common use, and Paper has been the common use name for Paper by 53 ever since it was introduced in 2012. So we have well over a year of documented use of the name Paper for the application paper by 53.
I see. That makes sense. That said, I've always questioned, long before this news, I've questioned the company calling it paper by 53. To me, it made a lot more sense to simply call it paper.
I agree.
But that apparently they didn't ask us.
Had they asked us, we'd be having a very different conversation
right now. Yeah, we would have said, no, call it paper. Are you crazy? But nonetheless, they did file this trademark for paper. They do have this common use track history. And it's really curious to me that Facebook would do this. That it's Dave Hamilton likened it. We were discussing it this morning. Dave Hamilton likened it to Apple calling stuff iTools or iPhone, even though they know that there are existing products with those names. They'll just deal with the consequences later.
Yeah, and I think that's probably spot on.
And Facebook, you know, and Mark Zuckerberg is a cocky young man who has massive success under his belt.
Yes, he does.
And even more massive amounts of money, and he probably felt that they could just do that. I find it to be a curious choice. For one thing, this is Facebook should want us talking about what a great app it is, and I don't know that it's a great app. I haven't even downloaded it.
I've been playing with it, and I think it's very pretty. I think it's a much prettier way of viewing your Facebook content than the current Facebook app. But I do have some issues with it.
Okay, fair enough. And I don't think it. I mean, do you think they're trying to evoke the concept of a newspaper?
Yeah, to a degree.
Well, it's not where I go with it. Facebook paper. It's not where I go with it in my head. It's a silly name, and they instead of talking about the app, we're talking about the app's infringement on
53.
Yeah.
Yes. Now,
that's a stupid way to launch it.
It is a stupid way to launch it because it casts the application in a bad light. But actually, now that I think about it, only for a subset, because a lot of people that are Facebook users on the iPhone, I would venture to say, don't know about Paper by 53 because it's an iPad-only app.
Well, yeah, true. True.
So, you know, yeah, so there's that. But I think it's still a very uncool move.
Should have called it Facebook Bored. If you're going to infringe on someone, at least infringe on the thing that you're actually trying to copy.
Right. Yeah, and the first thing that I thought I had two near simultaneous thoughts when Facebook's paper was announced. One was, wow, what a ripoff of Flipboard.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I bet the guys at 53 aren't happy now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and Facebook Board to me has a lot more legitimacy. I mean, it's obvious what they're trying to copy, and yes, they're definitely, you know, definitely it would still be... Maybe it wouldn't actually be a legal infringement. I mean, it would be copying, right? Everyone would know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot more sense than Facebook Paper. I don't like the name. I think it's a bad name.
Except it's not even called Facebook Paper. It's just
paper.
Paper.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
I don't get that company. I don't get that company. I don't get that company.
No. It's no.
Although, to be fair, Facebook does allow me to see whatever kind of idiotic political ramblings my various cousins are up to.
That's true.
Yeah.
They also have, or at least had, a good working relationship with the people at 53, because they've been totally fine with 53 doing hooks back into Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So you can post your drawings as images right to Facebook. So it's not like they didn't have a communication channel open between the companies. It would have been nice if at least before they launched, if Facebook had gone to 53 and said, hey, so we're working on this app and we're going to call it Paper. And then they could have at least had some sort of dialogue before it launched.
Right.
And if nothing else, they could have had a gentleman's disagreement. But instead, the people at 53 find out when the press release goes out. So they found out the same time everyone else did.
But that was a bit of a shock. I bet it ended up doing a lot for their downloads, though.
That would be a really nice side effect.
Mm-hmm. It's a good app, by the way. We like it. All right. We are running out of time. Let's end on a high note. A higher note. See what I did there? Higher note.
Yeah, I see what you did there. I figured you're either going there or you're about to try and sing a really high note.
Not going there. So Apple has hired yet another person in the
health and fitness world. Medical science world.
Yeah. A sleep expert. He was a senior scientist for Philips Research. He's a sleep expert. He has been doing lots of research on sleep for a long time. Founded the Philips Sleep Experience Laboratory. Was a member of a Dutch sleep science club of some sort, an academy or something to that effect.
A club. You know what? I want a sleep club. I want a club where I can show up and we all just take naps.
Oh, yeah. That's a great... Oh, man. I want a nap right now.
So do I. Yeah. Let's start a club.
Let's start a club. All right. Let's do that. Jeff and Brian's Sleep Club.
Yeah.
No, I love this. Neither one of you are allowed to be part of it. We don't want you.
Interns don't get to sleep.
Exactly.
It's part of the job description.
Exactly. So, the guy's name is it's Raymond. Last name is Raymond. Oh, what's his first name?
Oh, see, now I'm on the spot trying to remember his name.
It's a Deutsche name. It's not actually. Is it like Jerry
Seinfeld?
Ray
Satya.
you got it right, but the wrong guy. Roy. The really Dutch name of Roy. good Lord. Anyway,
Why do people listen?
I had no idea. Roy Raymond, been hired. And what's really interesting to me about this is that, you know, Apple's got a lot of money. And Apple has been spending a lot of money hiring people in health and fitness. Now, sleep. These are scientists. These are the chief medical officer from Masimo Corporation. Sensor experts, all these different experts, and we assume that this is the iWatch product that they're going to be working on, what we've been calling the iWatch product. And I think that Apple is working on something that is going to blow us away.
I have to agree with you. If there's a long time where I wasn't convinced that Apple was working on a wrist top device, but after looking at the trail of hires over the past couple years, I can't imagine that they're not working on a wrist top device, and it's going to give companies like Fitbit and LifeTrack a run for their money.
Yeah, and Nike.
Yes.
And they've hired two people from Nike, and, you know, and they consider Nike to be buddies, I think. And yes. So, you know, I say that Apple has spent a lot of money, not for Apple, but for the segment. For the wearable segment, for the health and fitness segment, Apple has been spending a lot of money hiring some top-notch people that probably have expensive price tags, a paperclip to their ear.
Yeah, well, they hired Oh, I just forgot his name. Former executive from Yves Saint Laurent.
Right. Deneb. I only typed this yesterday, so you know you can't really expect me.
And I think it's only been a day or so since I've typed it. Then there's J.
Blahnik of Nike.
Mm-hmm.
Deneve. Paul Deneve. That was the guy from Yves Saint Laurent. Right. Ben Schaefer from Nike.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Dougherty she was in charge of hardware. I'm quoting you here. Was in charge of hardware at the Transdermal Medicine Delivery Company, Sano. And then Uyen Block, who was the director of optics and systems engineering at C8 Medisensors. And then Todd Whitehurst, who was the vice president of product development at Senseonics.
Right. So what Apple has right now is a collection of people that understand design for wearable technology, understand what it is that consumers and athletes want in fitness technology. They have people that understand pulse and oximeter technology. Mm-hmm. Now they have someone that understands sleep. They have people that understand several different types of medical sensing equipment.
They've got a guy who knows shoes.
Yeah, oh, well, even better than that, not only does he know shoes, but he's an expert in high-tech fabric design.
Ah, right. That was his, right. I remember.
Yeah, and he was running some of the Skunkworks-type projects that Nike had for wearable tech. So they have this collection of people that they've been amassing that...
And these are just the people we know about.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of people, most undoubtedly, that we don't know about.
Wasn't that guy, the person, who's the person you just most recently covered? Is that Michael O'Reilly?
Yes.
Dr. Michael O'Reilly,
and...
That happened back in June, and we just found out about it. So yeah, does that ring a bell?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
I mean, so, yeah, we have no idea who else they've been hiring. And, like, you know, what are the kind of top-notch, just engineers? These are basically all people at the executive level that we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. These are, to give everyone a wonderful Indiana Jones reference, top men.
And women.
And women, yes.
Yeah, so I think, man, I'm expecting to be wowed by what Apple ends up doing. I think that they're going to do something that is going to be disruptive. No idea what it's going to disrupt.
But well,
I don't think this is going to be a Me Too product.
No, this isn't going to be a Me Too product. I agree completely. My Jedi instincts are telling me that Apple is the company that's actually going to release a product that I will wear on my wrist all the time. And how often have you seen me with a watch on?
It's true.
Yeah. I almost never wear anything on my wrist.
And I wear a mechanical watch on my wrist. I love mechanical watches. And...
I love your watch.
I fear that I'm going to want to displace my mechanical watches with whatever Apple's doing.
Well, you could
which
do
is
what
a ridiculous fear, but
yeah, but oh, if you're going to have a fear, it might as well be that.
Yeah, I could do one on each wrist. I could be cool.
That I was going to suggest that, or what I've been doing, because I've been testing a lot of wrist top fitness tracking devices for my Macworld Expo presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day, I was out backcountry skiing to test a bunch of devices. I had three different devices on the same arm.
Nice. Yeah. Solid. Now, that is a sign of cool. The only thing that would have made you cooler is if you've been wearing Google Glass. Like, with the three watches.
What did I do? Why do you hate me?
All right. We have gone over... We have gone over... We should probably end this before...
Before it gets any worse.
In the shower with taking pictures with our Google Glass on.
Okay, we're going to draw in a totally different demographic. To be fair, we'd probably make more money.
That's true. Oh, God. How sad. How sad. All right, take us out.
Yeah. Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening and putting up with us. And feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm JGam at both places. Also, although maybe I shouldn't say it this week, if you haven't been to the iTunes store yet to give our show a rating, please do that.
Yeah, indeed. You can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is recorded by Boom just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed because we love you.
We do love you. And we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.